This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Kaylee Takach Bullard, President and CEO of the National Oilseed Processors Association. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Modern Ag Alliance. Learn more at their website, controlweedsnotfarming.com. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with NOFA's Kaylee Takach Bullard next. They don't get sick days and no overtime pay. They report directly to Mother Nature, who loves to throw a good curveball. So why is the litigation industry fighting legislation and continuing to push lawsuits against a proven product that is a farmer's best defense against weeds? American farmers have been doing what's best for their land for generations, and they rely on glyphosate as a safe, affordable, and effective tool to control tough weeds and get the job done. No one knows how to feed and fuel a growing population better than the American farmer. But if our farmers lose a critical tool like glyphosate, they'll be stuck with just two options: grow less food or rely on foreign countries. Our farmers need to be supported. Keep glyphosate available for American farmers. Show your support and learn more at controlweedsnotfarming.com. Paid for by Modern Ag Alliance in support of America's farmers. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. The nation's oilseed processors have made substantial investments to grow capacity to meet increasing demand for feed, food, and fuel in the nation and around the world. At the same time, the industry is poised for growth. It's also facing headwinds from public policy encouraging imports of competitive supplies from other countries, including used cooking oil from China. Kaylee Takach Bullard has an extensive career in the oilseed industry and is excited to work with the nation's oilseed processors.
We have made so many expansions. We've invested $6 billion in additional crush capacity expansions, up to 30% more. And they are just so hands-on, and they want to be helpful. They want to tell their story. They want us to be out there explaining what we do, why we do it, and how proud we are of how we do it. So I knew what a great industry it was coming in, but I am blown away at just the sheer magnitude of what they can do to feed and fuel the world.
The oilseed industry is huge globally. Where does the U.S. industry rank?
I'm biased, but I think we have a better product. In fact, I know we do, just looking at Brazil and Argentina and the capacity and the reputation that we have. The American oilseed and, you know, soybean industry in general is amazing, and we can do a lot of great things. We have an ability to expand, and we have the best farmers in the world here to do that.
If we don't have the cheapest product in the world of either oil or meal, what gives us an advantage, and what does the soy industry in the U.S. have to rely on to seal the deal?
We have the capacity, the efficiency, the relationship, and just frankly, our growing seasons and the quality of the beans.
Comparing the soybean that comes from the U.S. and the various regions that we raise it, compared to our competitors in Brazil and in Argentina, they now raise more than we do. What's the quality? What is the quality difference between our product and theirs? And does that create a better value sale?
So the U.S. soy industry certainly provides superior benefits to other soybean origins, specifically Argentina and Brazil. The total damage of the soybean actually and the overall quality is a lot better. The U.S. soybeans have very little heat damage as the crop dries naturally in the field, and it's typically harvested at more optimal moisture levels. I know in some of the Brazilian samples we've looked at, 4 to 6 times more heat damage exists. So in terms of heat damage, we are a much better placed crop. In terms of moisture of the soybean, we have really lower moisture, better storage conditions, which give us kind of that advantage. And then really the soybean meal processing conditions really are better with some of the common indicators. So I think, yeah, absolutely. It may be a little more expensive right now, but we definitely have the ability to have a better quality soybean, and we're bringing a lot more online. If you look at the soybean, 20% of it's oil, about 80% of it's the meal and the protein. And so as we increase our capacity, we have increased our capacity. We have crushed 71 million more bushels of soybeans year over year from October to March this year. So we have a lot more capacity coming online, which hypothetically should decrease the price as well, and the quality isn't compromised.
So if you look at the price per ton, and I'm stealing some lines here from Jim Suter at the Soy Export Council and Stan Bourne and Doug Winter, who have been previous chairs there, they talked about when they were speaking with global customers that the reality was, if you were looking at protein content, if you were looking at energy per cargo, there was a better value in buying the U.S. product than there was against our competitors.
Absolutely. The whole soybean quality, a lot of the soybean processing indicators, we have better digestible amino acids for the swine and poultry. And you're right, the energy levels. Better animal performance, reduced diet costs, reduced formulation challenges, increased sustainability. So all in all, better for the soybean meal end users.
You led me to the next question, because I know that the American Soybean Association has worked hard to try to understand the needs of global customers. And even now, the Europeans are willing to accept our production practices and certification that we can provide. Talk about sustainability in the soy industry, and then within the oilseed processors in the U.S. themselves, what role has sustainability played, and what role do you expect that it will play?
Sustainability is so key to everything that we do, and we've really done an amazing job as a soybean industry to reduce our carbon emissions by 19% since 2015 alone. We're already doing many sustainable practices and continuing to increase those. Actually, since 2015, we have seen a 19% decrease in the carbon emissions of our soybeans, a 6% decrease of our soybean meal, a 22% decrease for our crude soy oil, and an 8% decrease for our refined oil. And we're doing this all with a lot of practices such as better land management. That's really the improved soil health, water quality, better land efficiency, improving that quality of the seed. So that's really contributed to that 24% increase in yield since 2025. And then kind of the pesticide application, changing farmer practices, decreasing that chemical application, and implementation of no-till cover crops. And then, of course, on the crushing side, the manufacturing, we're improving our technologies, and we've switched from coal to natural gas, so that certainly improves it. So we've done a lot of work, and the work's not done. We're going to continue to lower those carbon intensity scores and keep working on our sustainability profile, because that's what consumers want, and that's what we're here to deliver.
So your sustainability story really is a combination of the grower and of the processor of themselves, and I think you found that in your recent life cycle analysis.
Absolutely. It's the whole soybean supply chain working together for that end user of our product. Absolutely. And in fact, we commissioned that study with USB, who are our close partners, and we're proud to be partners of our friends in the soybean world.
So how big is the renewable fuel business to the National Oilseed Processors Association?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, that's a lot of where our focus is right now, but I will say the majority of our oil goes to food use. About 52% of our soybean oil went to food use, while the rest went to either industrial use and fuel. So we are bringing a lot to renewable fuel use. There are a lot of issues right now impacting us on the renewable fuel side of the house. We have the carbon, the California Low Carbon Fuel Standard. That is something that we're spending a lot of time. We've spoken to the California board on that, and we're continuing to work on that. We have a public comment due on May 10th. We obviously have the 40B tax credit that came out yesterday, and then at the end of the day, we're continuing to beat the drum on higher RVOs. I indicated earlier that our crush capacity has expanded. We've invested a lot, and so we can meet the demands and the needs, and we can hit higher RVOs, so we're going to continue to press that. So I think the three topics that are top of mind are California Low Carbon Fuel Standard, the SAF tax credits, and then, of course, the RVOs with EPA.
Kaylee, if we look at the industry moving forward, there's a lot of people talking about a paradigm shift. Thus far, we have been crushing that soybean largely for the meal, and soybean oil for the longest time was just almost a useless byproduct. Today, soybean oil is not a useless byproduct, and certainly the fuel industry has taken advantage of that. Do you see a day that we could crush that bean for the oil first and then the meal as a byproduct?
I mean, you mentioned paradigm shift, and that's really what we've seen. There's been such a rapid expansion and interest in additional renewable diesel capacity. So we are, our expansions were based on the need for additional oil versus the meal side. So you're exactly right. We are slated right now as an industry to expand over 30%, which equates to a 1 billion gallon increase in capacity. So that's pretty extreme in a good way. I mean, we have the capacity, we have the investment, and so I think that proves that we're here and we're ready to invest and we're ready to play in that market. We was just need the right market signals to continue.
Was it frustrating to see the RVO numbers from the EPA? Were they set at standards that allowed for growth, or did the RVO even keep up with what you're able to do today?
Now, we were very disappointed in the last RVOs because we met with the administration. We indicated how much our capacities have expanded or continuing to expand. And at that point, there were a lot of announcements out there, but there wasn't as much increase in capacity shown. Now we've seen year over year from October to March, 71 billion bushels of soybeans crushed. We're showing the proof that we can handle that increased capacity. So we are going to take that story back to EPA as they look at the next round of the RFS and the RVOs this November. We're going to start sharing that story and how much we have increased capacity and how much more capacity we can have come online in the event that the market signals trigger that. And part of that is the RFS having higher renewable volume obligations.
Kaylee, how much of the future of the National Oilseed Processors Association is tied to the government and announcements that will either come with liquid fuels for automobiles or with sustainable aviation fuel and a new frontier?
I mean, we do feed food, fuel, and industrial uses, and I think there's a lot of excitement on industrial uses. But to your point on renewable fuels, there are a lot of questions right now. I mean, we just saw the SAF guidance issue. We still have a lot of questions. That's not implementable right now. So really, 45Z is what is going to give us the market signals that we need. We do need to know what's going to happen with the low-carbon fuel standard in California. There's a lot of folks pushing for a veg oil cap in that market, and that's something that we can't see happen. I mean, a veg oil cap effectively would increase fossil diesel use, it would increase fuel costs, it would increase carbon emissions, it would increase nitrous oxide emissions and PM emissions. So there's a lot of things happening right now that are going to determine what our expansions look like. A lot of that's on the fuel side.
So if we look at a mark today, when we talk about the National Oilseed Processors Association, how many plants are there now? How many plants are under production, and how many blueprints would be ready to go if you got the green light to participate in all of these areas?
Oh, that's a great question, Jeff. We have about 11 that are operational at a capacity since 2020. So that's where you're really seeing that increase in 71 million bushels of soybeans over that six-month period we talked about. We have 4 that are under expansion right now. And then we have about 6 that are under construction as well. On the project side, there's about 7 or 8 more out there that continue to, you know, be firm or speculative.
So with California's low carbon fuel standard, how is that a challenge for the liquid fuel business? And how is that a challenge for your members?
There's a lot of capacity for renewable diesel coming and going to California. There's also a lot of incentives with California. They are incentivizing waste feedstocks at a much higher premium than they are for homegrown soybeans made into homegrown fuels. So there's a lot riding on California. The majority of the renewable diesel capacity is going to California, but that's decreasing because of the amount of imported feedstocks that are coming into this country. So how California ends up implementing their low-carbon fuel standard is very important to us. It's very important for us that we don't see a vegetable oil cap. It's very important to us that the imported feedstocks continue to be verified to make sure that there isn't fraud there and that these imported waste feedstocks are exactly what they say they are, because they are competing with homegrown soybeans.
What I think we're seeing is that, yes, your market can grow whether RVOs are higher or not, but there would be a clear signal that the gate is open wider for greater production if the RVO numbers were higher.
Absolutely.
So now let's move to the GREET model that was announced from the Treasury Department here recently. 40B was announced 17 months after that tax credit was available, but truthfully, the sustainable aviation fuel market is just budding now. But there were restrictions that were put in place, and for soybeans, farmers would have to have a cover crop and would have to plant no-till. How important are the 45Z rules, one, to be announced on time, and two, to allow that actual, that more soybean farmers could participate in providing a stock for that market?
Yeah, you're exactly right. On 45Z, we're really looking to that. The 40B tax credit that was issued earlier, unfortunately, is just really a market signal to let us know what the agencies are thinking and how they're going to implement 45Z. So it did give us a better understanding of that. But in terms of the Climate Smart Ag practices, we're really excited that they have added those as part of this modeling. Obviously, we would like them to be unbundled. We would like them to add more practices. The way that they've done it for 40B has kind of incentivized winners and losers from a perspective of bundling. And so we would like to see additional climate smart practices. We like no-till, we like cover crops, but we don't believe that they should be bundled the way that they have. We've received positive signals from the administration that as they look to 45Z, that they are hoping to add additional climate smart ad practices as well as unbundle those. So that would be a big win for our industry. The timing is challenging because 45Z is supposed to go into effect in 2025, and as we understand it, they're just starting to put together an RFI. They're going to go through a proposed and final rule process, and that takes a lot of time. And for our farmers, for our processors to really have certainty, we need that guidance as soon as possible so we can make the right planting decisions and participate in this market to the extent we're able to. So if you walk back a proposed, a final, and an RFI, I mean, that could bring us into early 2025. And at that point, that's when the credit goes into effect. So it really is important to get it right, but it really is important for us to have it as soon as possible so we can understand what we're working with.
Well, the 40B rules came 17 months after they were available with only 9 months left. For 45Z, if they are going to be able to produce, then it appears that there should be an amount of time for them to make plans and for your members to be able to in some way contract or guarantee from producers that those supplies are going to be available.
Yeah, to your point, with 40B being 17 months after, all the decisions for planting have been made, so we need certainty. We need to understand what the rules of the road are so we can make those decisions effectively. And that's really what we need out of 45Z.
So talking about soybean production, it was pointed to me earlier that obviously producers have to comply with NRCS rules. And for cover crops, those have to be planted after the harvest. Well, if you're in North and South Dakota, sometimes when the harvest is done, the ground is frozen. Charles Grassley said that he appreciated the rule, but at the same time, there were too many strings attached that only a small percentage of acres or farmers would actually be able to participate.
We agree with the disparity there, and that's something that must be fixed in the 45Z, and that is something that we will work with the soybean industry to take to USDA and participate in the process and articulate why farmers need to be making decisions. These can't be bundled, and they need to be able to pick and choose what works best for their region or geography of the country or state in which they're in.
Kaylee, did you hear deeper into the announcement what verification would be required for those bushels, certification from farmers or from the oilseed processor of whether those crops actually met the standard?
Our current supply chains aren't set up to do that as an initial manner. We have commingling throughout every step of the process. So in order to do what they're asking, we certainly have to continue to look at that and see how we would be able to set our supply chain up for it, provide them feedback as to what's workable and what's not. As an initial concern, we did see there was farmer direct to SAF producer, and we were thinking that it cut us out of the process. We do see that there's some intermediary language in there that needs some improvement. So there are quite a few things that we need to provide feedback on. The other thing that I would note is we have seen the traceability that they have in mind for us, but when it comes to the waste feed stocks, it doesn't appear to be created equal. So that's something that we're looking into and determining if they should be thinking through that as well.
So into your industry, because of these rules written this way, you're creating almost identity preservation, a requirement for identity preservation, not only from the feedstock, but from the finished product.
That is true, and that costs more, and that takes a lot more administrative burdens and separation throughout the supply chain.
So let's take another step in areas that there might be competition. Used cooking oil is also available and is being imported into the U.S. How much of an impact on the soy industry and how much on the oilseed processors?
UCO imports into the U.S. for fuel use have skyrocketed since 2021, leading to growing interest in ensuring that fraudulent feedstocks aren't coming into the U.S. at the expense of our homegrown soybeans and biofuels. And just to put into perspective how much more is coming to the U.S., in 2021 alone, less than 300 million pounds were coming in, and now over 3 billion pounds in 2023 of UCO. To put it another way, that equates to 383 million gallons of renewable diesel and nearly 236 million bushels of soybeans. So this is a lot of volume of used cooking oil coming into the U.S. and displacing U.S. crops.
So is there a thought that some of this might be subsidized by those governments and that they're dumping here? Or maybe the better question is, what do we know about those products that are coming to the U.S.?
You know, we support the use of verifiable UCO, and these feed stocks help supply USRD and the BD system, and biofuels play a vital role, but we need them to be verifiable and to make sure that they are not fraudulent. Right now, there's a lot of industry discussions on what is coming in and what it looks like. Right now, there is not a definition of what UCO is, so there's a lot of question marks on that. I also think California is incentivizing all this fuel to come in because it essentially carries a much lower CI score than soybean oil. So our public policies are incentivizing this to happen. And so at a bare minimum, we really need to understand what's coming in, verify that what it is says it is, it's from where it says it is, and that we're considering options to address this.
Let's just say that things go in the right direction and you're able in the renewable diesel market to grow, that you're able to participate in a budding and growing sustainable aviation fuel market, and these new uses continue to come online and demand for the product continues to grow from your membership. That's a lot of crushing. That's a lot of oil, but that's a lot of meal. What do you do with what in this new paradigm is your byproduct?
We're thinking through how can we work with our domestic livestock, poultry, swine, turkey industries to figure out how we can better ration what our animals are eating, and also how can we understand what their export markets look like to meet their needs. Simultaneously, we are working closely with USEC to better understand what those export markets and opportunities look like in terms of where the market's emerging. Where are they more interested in high-quality soybean meal versus best price? So those are the things that we're looking through into the future to work with our animal stakeholders here in the U.S. and work with those governments and industries abroad who are interested in soybean meal.
Well, Kaylee, we'd like to congratulate you on a successful run in your career so far, and now your new position here with the National Oilseed Processors Association. Congratulations, and we look forward to hearing more from you personally as you continue to serve this industry. We'd also like to thank you for taking time from your schedule to be with us for this edition of Open Mic. Kaylee, it is Open Mic, and today you've got the mic for the last word.
Thanks so much for having me, Jeff. This has been a tremendous opportunity, and I'm not going anywhere anytime soon, so I look forward to many more years of working together. This industry is innovative. We have proven success in investing, expanding, and reducing our carbon intensity. Now we just need the market signals to do what we do best, which is food and feed the world. So with that, I look forward to working with you and continuing to push for this tremendous industry. Thank you.
Our thanks to Kaylee Tkach-Buller, President and CEO of the National Oilseed Processors Association, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by Modern Ag Alliance. Learn more at their website, controlweedsnotfarming.com. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nelling.